So, welcome back to the Birdie Bug Pod,
episode 48.
I'm not going to say we're back.
It has been a long time.
2025
was going to be our consistent era, but it's been busy.
Actually, that's been the biggest gap, hasn't it? Because it has been busy.
That was mainly my fault because I bought a house and moved house and I didn't have Wi-Fi to do research and I had to pack up my entire house and move it and you had to come
and
help
me. Who moved it?
You came and helped me move it and drove the van.
Dad hired a van.
Yeah.
And how many trips did we do?
Quite a lot.
You've been moving, which has been pretty dramatic and a big thing.
And then I went and ran a marathon.
That's your first house. So it's a big thing.
First house. That was good fun.
Oh, and you've run a marathon.
Yeah, so that was why we couldn't do it last weekend.
And you've been training quite a lot for that. And you cracked under 4 hours for his first marathon. So
chuffed with that.
Hang on.
Thank you. So, it's been busy. And I don't actually, because of that, I don't have any relevant wildlife-y catch-up. But you do.
Yeah, I've done my first habitat management volunteer spell for the RSPB when we were repairing some electric fences on a little island in the middle of an estuary.
Which you wisely did just before moving house.
Actually I did the day after I'd moved your cousin.
Yeah. That was a tiring week.
That was a week. I moved your cousin, which took 2 days. Then I did habitat management. Then I moved you the day after. So I'm 63, you know. I was absolutely shattered.
It's good for you.
But the habitat management was great. Big team of people repairing fences to stop predation. Basically, it's a tern. They call it Little Tern Island. And we're hoping this time of year the little terns come in and nest. And a couple of years ago, they got predated very badly. So they put electric fences around and we were just repairing all those because, believe it or not, even in the middle of the estuary, the foxes get across there and they get predated by gulls and crows. So we're having to put posts in with spikes on, you know, these flexible spikes to stop, obviously, the bird predators landing on them. So did a load of that, which was great. First time I'd done one. And I did my first breeding bird survey yesterday.
Day before.
Lost track of time. I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning and do it at dawn. So
and learn the distinguish between calls and songs and all sorts.
I had to learn an awful lot of bird ID and I went round with the head warden there whose bird ID was just insane and he made me feel very inadequate. But anyway,
has been doing it for a long time.
Yeah. So anyway, I've been doing that. Oh, and I went to Amsterdam for a few days in between. It's been
a busy few months.
Been a bit chaotic, as ever in our lives, it seems to be.
But we are still back to do another episode and been looking forward to it for ages.
Yeah, we've missed it, haven't we?
Yeah,
we really missed not, you know, when we got a couple of weeks out, we do miss doing the pod. So we better crack on. This is one of your suggested topics today.
We wanted to do another species episode because it's been a little while. We've done a few sort of different topics with things like volunteering and good news and things like that. So we wanted to go back to sort of our bread and butter and do a species. And one that's popped up a few times in, say, for example, our good news stories where things have been going on, but we haven't dedicated a full episode to, is the wildcat.
The Scottish wildcat,
which is the only surviving native sort of feline in Britain. And sort of deserves its own episode. I mean, we're big cat lovers anyway, so it's a nice excuse to chat about
it's been
cats.
A great one to research, actually, even though it's been sometimes a bit of a hard read, actually. So. Yeah.
But hopefully good news for it.
So do you want to sort of do the intro into the Scottish wildcat and the history behind it? And
what is the Scottish wildcat? It's interesting because I think when you look at them, they do sort of just look like a quite big, slightly cross tabby cat. They've got quite an angry looking face, but they aren't, you know, escaped domestic cats that have gone rogue. They are their own species. Interestingly, what we call the Scottish wildcat has sort of been thought as a subspecies of the European wildcat, which is actually spread quite widely across Europe and isn't endangered really at all.
Felis silvestris.
Yes, but so technically the European wildcat is Felis silvestris silvestris.
Yes.
The Scottish wildcat, I say, was thought to be a subspecies called Felis silvestris grampia, but it has now just been recognized as part of Sylvestris sylvestris. So that's to say that it was once thought to be a subspecies, but it is now just the European wildcat that happens to live in Scotland.
Do you know what it means?
I don't.
Felis sylvestris. Sylvestris.
He's really good at boxing. Sylvester Stallone.
No, it means woodland cat.
Oh, cool.
There you go.
So, yeah, well, we like to call it the Scottish wildcat because in the UK, they now, which I'll get into, only live in Scotland. It is essentially just the European wildcat that lives in Scotland.
Yeah.
So, like I said, they look like a big, angry, tabby cat, but there are some sort of distinguishing features that you can use to tell apart an actual wildcat from a domesticated sort of pet cat. Apart from the fact they are just bigger and quite muscular, they also have quite a broad head and really powerful jaws. They've got a really bushy tail that's banded with sort of dark rings and finishes in quite a blunt black tip. So that's one of their sort of features. Their coats are really thick and typically marked with quite bold stripes. And unlike domestic cats, they don't have sort of white paws or bellies, so they don't sort of have the little socks or white
that.
Feet.
That's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, and they also differ from the domestic cats because they have stripes on the cheeks and hind legs, and they don't tend to have spots or white markings around the back of their ears or anything like that. So there are a few telltale signs, although we will go into the fact there's a bit of crossbreeding and hybridization that can make this identification much harder.
Yeah, and actually that's an interesting subject, yeah, which we'll touch on a bit later.
When we get to the threats. Well, obviously, I said they're bigger. Typically, males can be between sort of 3 and 7 kilos, which, to be fair, your cat sits in that. Oh, and so does mine. Mine's about 5.5 kilos.
Yeah, well, my Lamps is 6.1 kilos. So, yeah, he's a big lad.
They sit within the range of a wild cat. And females are a little bit smaller, sort of 2 to 4.5 kilos. Like you say, woodland cat. I don't know if you want to go into a little bit of their what they eat and how they live.
Well, actually, another good name for them. They call them the Highland Tiger, don't they?
Yeah, well, they get a bit stripy tails and things like that.
And, well, no, can I just touch on something? Because the other differentiation between this Scottish wildcat and domestic cats is they reckon that pound for pound, the Highland wildcat is probably one of the most vicious carnivores on the planet, pound for pound. And is actually untamable. They don't think it's possible to tame a wild cat.
Yeah, when I was reading like a myth-busting thing, it's like, oh, can I tame a wild cat kitten? It's like, no, they will retain their wildness.
Yeah, wild cat keepers in the Highland Wildlife Park near Aviemore have endless tales of wild cats who've bitten, scratched and spat at the hands that fed them or feed them, even when they've been reared from kittens. So they it's just in their genes.
Yeah, they are feisty
felines.
They are
really feisty. Diet, they're carnivores. They mainly feed on small mammals, mice and field voles.
They're like a rabbit as well, I think.
They've got incredibly strong jaws, very good, very acute night vision, and ears that can rotate independently, which I didn't know.
Well, I mean, if you look at our cats, they rotate their ears. Random fact about cats in general, 32 muscles in each ear.
Oh, that's a good
fact. I learned that fact when I was about 10 reading about tigers, and for some reason it's just stuck with me.
They have forward-facing eyes, given binocular vision and the depth perception that they need for hunting. And the sort of habitat, wild cats prefer to live on the woodland edge, margins of on the margins of mountains and moorlands, particularly with rough grazing, because obviously there's a lot of little
rodents and mammals.
And they'll also take birds. So they're incredibly good at springing off their hind legs. So they'll often take birds that have they've maybe disturbed and the birds shot up in the air, and they'll take birds. There is also some occasions where they've even taken deer fawns.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. They're big, strong
cats. They're big
cats.
And they're incredibly aggressive. So they generally avoid higher mountain areas. They're probably will venture to an altitude of about 800 metres maximum, but not often will they're found in anything higher than that. And they will absolutely avoid heavy urbanized areas because they're very elusive and they're very private and
proper solitary animals.
Very solitary animals.
They're also their active period is one of my favorite words because they're crepuscular.
They are crepuscular,
which means
so
they're
it's dawn and dusk.
Yeah, the sort
it?
Of twilight hours either side of night is when they hunt, which I just love that word.
And they often create dens, like in little in logging piles and in rocky cairns and amongst tree roots. They'll also use empty rabbit warrens
and badger sets, apparently,
and fox dens and badger sets. That's absolutely
quite
right.
Optimistic, opportunistic.
Females are potentially fertile from December until August. Main mating season is late winter. Gestation period's about 63 to 68 days, and they'll give birth to between 1 and 8 kittens, although the average is about 3 or 4. And the kittens are born blind.
Oh.
And their eyes will only open after about 10 to 13 days.
That's cute.
And wildcat kittens begin to walk at about 16 to 20 days, and they'll begin to hunt with their mum at about 10 to 12 weeks.
Oh, that's adorable.
So they reach independence at the age of about 5 and 6 months, which is actually quite early, I would have thought.
Yeah, I mean, that is quite early, but I think a lot of the predatory mammals gain some level of independence quite quickly.
Yeah, and the male kittens will typically leave their mother's territory, a bit like, you know, wild lions and things like that, will
find their own patch, don't they?
Find their own patch, and sometimes moving up to 55 kilometers away before settling
down. I think they normally have a territory of about 3 square kilometers roughly, which they'll defend viciously.
Yeah, they live on average 7 years in the wild, 15 in captivity, but they, I think studies in Scotland have shown that only 7% of wildcats live longer than 6 years in the wild.
It's quite a harsh environment
With females living up to a maximum of 10 and males up to 8. Obviously, young wildcats have a very high risk of mortality within the first few weeks of leaving their mum. So that's kind of the habitat and breeding
behaviour. Would you like some history?
Love some history.
So I got quite interested in the history, and I'll try and keep it brief, but... They arrived in, you know, the British Isles just after the last ice age, which is about 9 to 10,000 years ago. And you're going to have to not laugh at this word, because I know you're going to struggle with it based on our chat before the podcast recording.
But I'll try and be a grown up.
I learned a new word. So just before the last ice age, essentially Britain was still connected to mainland Europe in what's essentially now a fully submerged landmass known as Doggerland. Now, hold it together, because I can see you struggling. But that's essentially when it was one big landmass. And during the end of the Ice Age, there was a big old tsunami. It caused a sub-water or sub-ocean landslide, and it essentially has caused, obviously, the disconnection of the British Isles. But as when it was still connected, when the ice was sort of retreating after the Ice Age, the forests started to return. And basically animals started to recolonize the British Isles because it's nice prime forestry habitat. And that included the European wildcat. It also included things like lynx, bears, wolves, all sort of the big mammals that you see in Europe and were obviously once in the British Isles before we drove them to extinction. They all sort of recolonized at about the same time. We had obviously vast temperate forest. It was a wonderful place for that sort of wildlife, especially for solitary.
It's really sad we don't have bears and lynx and things. Isn't it?
And wolves.
It'd be great to have a wolf.
I'd love to have brown bears rocking about. Yeah. And then essentially in the Neolithic to sort of Roman era, which is what, like 4000 to 400 CE, we started to see obviously the spread of things like agriculture, and we had some forests that were cleared for farmland, and obviously wildcats started to lose their preferred habitat. So with throughout the history part of the I will obviously touch on some of the threats, because around this time was also when what is arguably the biggest ecological shift, and that was the introduction of the domestic cats, which they're sort of thought to have arrived with the Romans, likely from sort of Egypt and Mediterranean area. And I didn't know this either, actually. Domestic cats descended from the African wildcat, and obviously they spread across, well, the whole world as pets, but they've also been used historically as pest control for rodents and things like that. And with them, apart from outcompeting a lot of animals, they also brought with them disease and things like that, which obviously impacted impacted wild animals such as our wild cat. It was then, you know, medieval, early modern period, sort of 500 to 1800 CE, you've got essentially human settlement just really expanding and hunting pressures increase. And you start seeing wildcats sort of being prosecuted for fur and all sorts of things like that. But
persecuted
in a court of law. persecuted.
Do you want to do that bit
again?
No,
it's fine. Leave it. I like the idea of them being persecuted for the crimes against the country.
Yeah, prosecuted and persecuted.
Yeah, a bit of both. They were Yeah, we'll leave that in, it's fine. Because I wrote it down as persecuted as pests or vermin, but yeah, for some reason decided
no, to... No, I like prosecuted. That works, it's fine.
So you did start seeing gamekeepers, essentially.
They should have been prosecuted.
Yeah, they should have been prosecuted for the persecution of the wildcat. but it was this area that really hit them hard. And by the 18th century, you started to see wildcats being pretty much extinct in England and Wales and really only clinging on in the Highlands of Scotland. Again, Victorian era, 1800s to early 1900s, this basically just continued and, if anything, increased. Gamekeepers employed sort of all sorts of methods just to take out all predators, not just wildcats. Yeah. We've spoken about it in our Bird of Prey episode, for example. Yeah. Another group
most of the birds of prey were persecuted to extinction, weren't they, back in the 1800s, early 1900s.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they're trying to keep their game animals alive. So it's not just the wildcats, also things like pine martens, another predator. Essentially, it was just the predators that they tried to wipe out, sadly.
And I'm assuming the same happened with wolf, bear, lynx,
obviously,
all of those.
A lot of the wolves and bears were also more heavily taken for things like fur and stuff like that. But again, they are a threat to the farm and the game animals and so were wiped out by farmers and gamekeepers. And by the early 20th century, essentially wildcats were reduced to just small isolated populations in the north and west of Scotland. So not even the whole of Scotland, they're really pocketed. And then we'll go on to the stuff from today, but in the mid-1900s, we started to see wildcats really struggling with a bigger threat, which arguably now is much bigger than the sort of hunting of them, and that is the hybridization with free roaming domestic cats.
Yeah, it's even bigger actually than habitat loss as well, isn't it?
Because there are certain, obviously in the real remote regions of Scotland where they're sort of hanging on, it's not rich agricultural land, it's mountain scrub, and so it's not necessarily being cleared for forests, but it is the hybridization threat of free roaming feral domesticated cats.
Yeah, we'll go on to that when we go on to the threat.
We can move on to that now, really, because my last line of the history was that by the early 2000s, estimates were saying the number of true wild cats may be fewer than 100, and some modern studies were saying that possibly none of the wild cats are pure wild cats.
Yeah, I've got here a recent survey suggested there's only 35 pure Scottish wild cats remaining. And even then, it's very difficult to monitor that. And to put their plight into perspective, there are over 1,000 giant pandas, 3,000 tigers, and 20,000 polar bears left in the world. And we immediately think of those animals as being right on the brink. Well, the Scottish wildcat, they think there may only be 35 left.
What I think is interesting is, obviously, I said right at the beginning of the episode that there's been times where the Scottish wildcat has been considered its own subspecies, in which case the extinction of it would be a loss of a species in a way.
Yeah.
Whereas now, taxonomically, it is just part of the European wildcat. And you could maybe then see an argument for people not worrying about so much because there are healthy wildcat populations, so you're not losing a species. But it's sort of iconic. It's the Scottish wildcat.
It's very iconic. And again, it's been stated that the Scottish wildcat is officially the world's rarest cat.
Yeah, well, in that case, actually, before we dive into threats, considering we've just called it iconic, do you want to touch a little bit on the folklore and the history of it from a cultural point? Because I've just covered it sort of geographically.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of folklore around the wildcat, which you can obviously imagine that it's considered an icon of the Scottish wilderness. And it's been used in clan heraldry since the 13th century. I quite like this. The Picts venerated the wildcats, and according to myth, the ancestors of the Catti tribe were attacked by wildcats upon landing in Scotland, and their ferocity so impressed the Catti tribe. So it impressed them so much that the wildcat became their symbol.
That's so cool. I mean, what a symbol.
Which was amazing. So area called Caithness, Land of the Cats, was named after them. Duke of Sutherland's Gaelic title from Caithness is Moira Chat, meaning the great man of the cats. And there's a cat in the clan crest, and their motto is Sans Peur, without fear.
Oh, that's great.
Great. And lots of other clans have similar themes in respect to the ferocity of this animal. I mean, it's just, it's incredible. When it's cornered, it will just attack.
It's almost like our version of the honey badger, isn't it? It's a small animal, just take on anything.
Absolutely. And they do say, it's, you know, pound for pound, one of the most ferocious carnivores on the planet, which I just think is absolutely amazing. Lots of other clans, Clan McIntosh, Clan McBean, which I love that clan. Clan McPherson have incorporated a wild cat into their respective crests. The group's motto is touch not the cat, bot a glove, and bot means without. So don't touch the cat.
I also had another motto for Clan McPherson. Is that how you're saying it? Which I'm going to butcher this, which was nay bean don chat gun lach mine. I'm really sorry if any Gaelic people listening, which apparently translates to be wary of the ungloved cat, which essentially means ungloved, referring to a wild cat with its claws out. So it's like, be wary of the cat with its claws.
It's going to absolutely rip you apart. Yeah. So
I liked that one. Not that I can say it.
There's lots of Celtic legends of the cat Sith, which tells stories of a cat-like creature, and they think this was based on the wild cat. It was a mythical cat was as large as a dog and had a white spot on its chest and was thought to be a witch in disguise. And apparently it was a really devious character, the cat Sith. He'd go around climbing over coffins and corpses of recently deceased before they were buried. And it was thought that the cat Sith would then steal the souls of the dead. So they even posted guards in the Scottish Highlands around bodies to protect them from the cat Sith. And as a cat, the cat Sith was attracted to warmth. So they weren't even allowed to light fires to keep warm around protecting the bodies in case the cat Sith turned up.
I also heard that the cat Sith has to be appeased with a saucer of milk.
And a saucer of milk would be left outside each household for the cat Sith, as it was believed that by leaving such a gift, the cat Sith would take a liking to the household. But if you didn't, there would be a cursed household. And if you were a farmer, for example, and had dairy cattle, they would produce no milk because you hadn't left the cat Sith any milk. So there's lots of
cultural significance.
Of significance. And it's all based on this wildcat. The wildcat was a totem of a number of other early Celtic tribes, like a totem, you know, they put totem poles up. And
I think it makes sense. I mean, you've got a very solitary, mysterious, ferocious predator. How can that not inspire some degree of legend?
The early Celtic tribes wore cat heads, which were possibly warriors, which wore cat skin over their battle helmets. And so loads and loads of myths and legends.
Yeah, which is what I was saying. You can talk about the fact that there are healthy populations elsewhere, and perhaps the Scottish wildcat is not its own independent species, but it's such an icon of the land. It would be an absolute catastrophe, an emphasis on the catastrophe, to lose it.
I like what you've done there. And there is one mention in some writings of a doctor. Dr. William Salmon, 1693, mentioned how portions of the wildcat were used for medicinal purposes. You know, in those days they thought...
Like tigers in ancient China.
Its flesh was used to treat gout. Its fat was used for dissolving tumours and easing pain. And its blood was used for curing falling sickness, which I guess was vertigo or something like that. And its excrement was used for treating baldness.
Oh, that's interesting. Are you eating it? Or you put it on your head?
I don't know. But they were certainly, they invoked awe and respect. And such was the wildcat's strength when fighting three terriers that Scottish naturalist Charles St. John commented, "If a tame cat has 9 lives, a wildcat must have a dozen." Because it's just got this incredible reputation. It's also got that look about it, hasn't it?
Yeah, they've got quite an angry look.
Just don't mess with me because I will rip you apart look. And I think it's well-founded because they will not back off. If they're cornered, they'll just attack.
Yeah.
They won't try and leg it. They will just attack you.
I mean, you have to give it to the group that is the cats, because wherever they are in the world, they've always seemed to have been worshipped, revered, or been part of them. I mean, look at the Egyptians and cats.
Yeah.
The Vikings love their cats. You've got the Chinese with tigers.
Yeah.
Wherever you go, the cats do seem to rule.
Yeah, absolutely. This sign off here, which will kind of lead us into the threats, which was a little sentence or two which does make you think, and this will make you think. While many old beliefs may seem strange to us today, perhaps the most bizarre thing of all is that in a nation of cat lovers, so few are aware of the plight currently facing the Scottish wildcat, one of the planet's most endangered felines. Indeed. So, yeah, there's all of those fantastic stories, and yet we're lots and lots of us are unaware just how
they are sort of tucked
on
away.
The brink. They say it's on the brink of extinction, and if there's only 35 purebred left, you know, they haven't got very many to mate amongst themselves, have they?
Unless we start bringing them in over, which we've done with other species.
So that kind of leads us into the threats and why there's only 35 left.
I don't feel like, because I've spoken quite a lot, we probably don't need to go into a lot of the threats in too much detail, because obviously when I did my little history of the wildcat, I commented on the clearing of the forests and change of agricultural sort of use of the land. So obviously we've mentioned that in pretty much every single species episode we've ever done. One of the biggest threats
habitat
is always
loss, yeah.
habitat loss and changes in land development. We've cleared forests, replaced it with crops, and then obviously built on it. So they lost, why they ended up moving north
absolutely.
And north. Obviously, then I also touched on the sort of persecution of wildcats from gamekeepers, along with the other predators. They were a threat to game birds. Again, agriculturally, they would be a threat to young farm animals, and so hunted ruthlessly, as with our birds of prey, wolves, lynx, the lot. And so, like I said in the history thing, by sort of the early 20th century, they were gone from England and Wales, and literally now they are holding on to survival in the remote parts of the Scottish Highlands. But the threat that's probably worth talking more about, because it's slightly more, I guess, unique, it's not one we've touched on every episode, is this hybridization with domestic cats, which not only obviously reduces the genetic viability of your wild cat population. One of the big things is they've caught a lot of diseases from domestic cats. It can impact their ability to successfully breed, like the offspring of the hybridization, that something that's not a pure wild cat, essentially that genetic pool, it will become less and less wild cat. And so you're not going to get back to what could be considered a pure wild cat again. And like we said, it's led to this hybridization being considered the biggest threat over habitat loss, hunting. It is the loss of a true genetically pure wildcat.
Yeah, absolutely. And to give you some idea of why this is happening, in 2023, there were estimated to be 10.6 million domestic cats in the UK, of which 20% are feral cats. And obviously feral cats are the big problem.
Yeah, because they're out there loose.
Because they're out there. And at least 16% of these feral cats are in Scotland. So
there's a lot of open land for them.
A lot of open land.
With a lot of food.
And again, it's a ripple effect, isn't it? Because as the habitat loss is driving Scottish wildcats to go closer and closer to urbanisation out of necessity to find food, they're then coming in contact with feral cats, which have obviously been, at one stage, domestic cats and gone feral. So they're out as well, you know, out and about all the time. So the whole thing is being squeezed, and this is the reason why it's happening. So.
Yeah, and one of the things that's difficult is obviously mentioned that there are differences visually between wild cats and domestic cats. There are still people who will go for a hike and swear they've seen a wild cat, and most of the time it is just a domesticated cat. But obviously as the hybridization takes place, they're harder to distinguish. And really the only way you can do it is by doing genetic tests, taking DNA samples and testing the genetics. It's not very easy nowadays, where most of the population are going to have some degree of hybridization, to be able to spot a wild cat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to the untrained eye, it looks very similar to a tabby. And, you know, this is causing a number of problems, because even though it's a protected species, and it is a protected species now, a conservationist called David MacDonald said, for the law to function, it has to be possible to identify what is a Scottish wildcat. And apparently in the 1990s, government officials tried to prosecute a gamekeeper who'd been accused of shooting three wildcats. Yet even an expert couldn't confirm that the victims were, in fact, pure Highland tigers or wildcats and not tabbies. And so the charge was dismissed. So it has these legal repercussions as well, of trying to enforce this protected species. Unless you can, like you say, genetically, absolutely identify that it is a pure wildcat. You know, there's a real big problem here.
Yeah, much harder to...
of trying to protect them.
And I mean, we've seen, again, we've mentioned it in our... there's a lot of parallels here to our bird of prey episode. Even a very easily identified bird of prey is difficult to really enforce the legal protection. Yeah. We still see our bird of prey species being shot and killed, and the, you know, people who are doing it not really seeing the consequences. And we can easily ID, oh, he shot a harrier or a buzzard, and yet
again, you've got to catch them in the act.
It's very difficult to actually enforce that. So then you make it even more difficult by not being able to confirm what they're shooting is actually a protected species.
And
the chances of, or at least the, I guess, the threat of enforcement is not going to be enough of a motivation to stop gamekeepers and farmers from.
And of course, that hybridization, those hybrid cats, you know, are moving on genetically every time they breed again, aren't they? So, you know, it's so hard.
Yeah. So in that case, after a slightly sad turn, shall we talk about the good stuff that's happening? Because the only time we've mentioned wildcats so far in previous episodes has been in positive news. So there are good things going on.
There are good things going on. Can I just finish with one thing about the threats to them? Because it made me smile. This is, again, just sort of confirming how aggressive these cats are. Obviously, predation is a problem. Foxes will take unguarded kittens, wildcat kittens. But predators such as eagles and foxes will actually avoid confrontations with adult cats. So when you think of a
size of an eagle,
I've watched films of golden eagles coming down and taking foxes and you know, killing foxes. Yeah. And you think of an amazing predator of foxes and the weapons a fox has, it will not confront an adult Scottish wildcat, but of course it will take unguarded kittens. So I just wanted to put that in because I find this
little cat with
real
attitude,
feisty cat with attitude, absolutely adorable. Yeah. I really do. I think and we've got to save this cat. Yeah. And obviously we'll now go on to the organisations and the projects that hopefully are working so hard to try and save this incredible animal.
Yeah, I mean there are loads, and we can't touch on all of them. But I'll stick links down because otherwise we'll be here all day. But obviously the big one is saving wildcats, which I know we've both done research on, because it really is the sort of flagship reintroduction project for the Scottish wildcat, led by the Royal Zoological Society of Scotland in partnership with sort of European and Scottish agencies. And importantly, they are running a captive breeding centre at the Highland Wildlife Park using cats that have been genetically confirmed to being pure, or as close to pure as you can get nowadays. And in 2023, they essentially conducted the first wild release of these captive wildcats into the Cairngorms National Park. Obviously, they were fitted with GPS collars. They've got camera tracks dotted about the national park to track survival, movement and behaviour, to really make sure that what is essentially the first large-scale attempt to re-establish a properly viable wild living population. So it's got to be really carefully monitored and done really sort of meticulously.
Yeah.
But it's a fantastic project.
It is a fantastic project. And they've got a number of criteria that they're trying to fulfil. And Saving Wildcats will establish Britain's first large-scale dedicated conservation breeding for release centre for wildcats, grow the population of wildcats through release of wildcats into the wild, continue to remove the threats facing wildcats in the Highlands to create safe areas for wildcat reintroductions, and work with local communities to understand how best people can benefit from the presence of wildcats, and obviously to educate them about their behaviour and what have you. Education is a massive thing. Yeah. We've mentioned this so many times. Educating communities, and communities working together like that and learning about, you know, their local wildlife and what they need and the help they need is so important. So it's great to see that education side of it is coming in as well. Yeah, it's as much about people as it is about wildcats, to be honest, isn't it?
Well, it's always the same nowadays. We cannot live completely separate from nature.
No, we overlap and we cross over. And
nature will never be separate from us. So if we're both to survive and thrive, we've really got to work to make sure we do so in a way that's, you know, good for them.
Yeah.
We can't just sort of partition it off and be like, they will always overlap. So the people who are managing land, whether it's landowners or farmers or just the local communities who are walking their dogs and, you know, taking part in that land all have a role to play to make sure it's a wildcat friendly habitat.
Yeah, and it's bringing that awareness as well, because how many of us actually knew there was only 35 pure bred, you know, wildcats left in the world? I didn't. I knew that they were threatened. I knew that there was, you know, a very small population left in a small area of Scotland, but I didn't realise it was only actually 30, possibly only 35. I mean, that is the brink of extinction.
Yeah,
isn't
I mean, it's, you can't really get much closer than that.
Because I said, if left to their own devices, if there's only 35, there's not many left to, you know, males and females to breed together.
No, obviously the small, and this is, you know, an obvious point, but the smaller the population, the, you know, less they're able to cope with any sudden changes. So if something happens, if a disease outbreak happens and wipes out even a small chunk of them, then their chance of rebounding from that is really minimal. So they're a very delicate population.
Yeah. I think also there's a plan, isn't there, I believe, to try and introduce them into England and Wales again?
Yeah, I did see that. I'm always sceptical because I keep reading about plans to reintroduce the lynx to the Lake District, and these things are always talked about but so rarely get approved. I mean, look, we've only just managed to get some approval that beavers can be free roaming and not within enclosure. That's not even a predator, and it's taken so long.
Well, white-tailed eagles, of course. Yeah. Look at that.
It's taken so long to win over certain like groups of people just to let beavers come back.
And yes, and they're still causing controversy, isn't
it? And they're comparatively harmless. I'm not saying wildcats would cause harm, but you know, you've then got farmers and, you know, gamekeepers still exist who have historically got rid of these sort of animals from the land. Fishermen unjustifiably don't like beavers for clearing out fish stocks, even though they're vegetarian. You're going to have a lot of pushback from landowners who aren't going to want a ferocious predator.
Yeah, although it's been, you know, it's been proved that wildcats very, very rarely take livestock.
Yeah, but
very rarely.
My point being that it's been proved that beavers don't eat fish biologically, and you've still got people pushing back saying we don't want them on.
It's also the case of white-tailed eagles who very rarely take livestock. They primarily are fish eaters, and yet still we have farmers and gatekeepers already poisoning white-tailed eagles. And
so I always read these, and I think whenever it comes to especially any predatory animal that historically we've wiped out, is the reintroduction when they're completely extinct, when it's trying to boost a hanging on by a thread population, but they are already there. We're just trying to reinforce the animals that are already there, is a much easier thing to sell than it's not being.
Yeah, no, definitely. And historically, they've been there for thousands of years. So, you know, it's much easier to reintroduce them into that habitat that they've already been in.
I'd love to see it. I'd love to see wildcats in England and Wales.
There is feasibility studies being done for wildcat reintroductions in England and Wales, but they've been doing feasibility studies for lynx and...
Yeah.
And I'm not sure about wolves, but they've been doing it for
lynx. I love lynx in the Lake District. People obviously want, but it'd be so cool. But obviously, I'm coming from...
Take small children and things like that. That's the only thing,
I'm coming from the point of view that, you know, I like the fact that the UK, for example, we're fortunate to live in a part of the world that doesn't have extreme weather, tornadoes, earthquakes. But I'm quite upset that we don't have the venomous snakes, the scorpions and the big spiders, because I would love that.
I'm not so fussed by that.
So I do come from a slightly different angle. I only want to go to Australia to see the big old spiders and stuff. Yeah. And most people don't want to go there for that for that reason.
I'm quite happy with an adder or two. That's about as far as I go. And the good old house spider that we get here.
Don't fancy like the red back widow in your shoe.
No, can't say that I do, mate. I'm sure they're amazing animals, but there you go.
So cool to see.
Have you got any others? I've got one called Wildcat Haven, but you've got a couple.
I've got it's one called the Highland Foundation for Wildlife, and it's a much smaller charity, and it's not just on wildcats, but it essentially focuses really heavily on habitat management, community involvement, and trying to support things like wildcat surveys. But crucially, they also partner with landowners and gamekeepers to create what they call a wildcat-friendly landscape. So they're quite a small organisation, but they're really working with the people sort of around to try and make sure the wildcats have an area that they can survive and thrive, which I just thought was nice. Their angle is they really emphasise this sort of coexistence of rural livelihoods with the local traditions and trying to embrace the... Like all the stuff you talk about, this cultural link to this magnificent animal and trying to bring that sort of pride back to the Scottish wildcat, which I thought was a really nice angle for a charity to take.
I love that because the wildcats had such an impact on that culture and people, and going back thousands of years. And so
it's something that you see every now and then with another species we talk about, like the salmon has played such a huge role in English culture. We did an episode on a bit like eels as well. We did a big episode on the part that these fish have played, and same with salmon. And you're starting to see charities sort of bring that in and being like, look at the part they've played in our history, they deserve.
And when you think, because we talked about eels being like currency, so they had that incredible cultural importance, didn't they?
Yeah, so I think it's really nice to bring back that historical significance. I mean, look at the part they've played in our entire history. Like, they deserve to be looked after and to have part of the land. And so it's really nice to see the same being done for the wildcat.
It would be tragic.
It would be absolutely tragic.
Because it's such a, I mean, I know obviously, you know, you can go and look at it and think, oh, that's just a big tabby cat. But really look at that cat, because it's such a stunning animal.
It's definitely an animal you want on your clan's crest.
And you definitely want it on your side in a fight. Don't you?
I also did have Trees for Life. And their project Rewilding the Highlands.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
Which, again, is not a wildcat exclusive project, but they are doing the sort of real large-scale goal of restoring native woodland, which is obviously going to benefit wildcats, but also things like the red squirrels and the pine martens, all sorts of animals that have really struggled since our native woodlands have vanished. So I always like to highlight an organisation out there planting native trees.
Well, that habitat restoration, again, it's got to be a big part of re-establishing wildcats in the right area. So I've got one called Wildcat Haven, which is a grassroots community-driven conservation project. I found this really interesting. We are the only organisation focused on keeping the Scottish wildcat where it belongs, in the wild, not in cages. We are the only organisation that treats feral and domestic cats with the respect that they deserve, because we love all cats. That's their kind of mission statement. But to accomplish the goal of trying to save the Scottish wildcat, their goal is to detect and identify every feline, neuter every domestic cat for free, educate the local communities, and create a network of community volunteers. So it's trying to save it by removing the threat of hybridization in a humane way. So
I did see other organizations,
and I thought that was a really big part of it.
I have seen organizations that are capturing, neutering, and returning essentially feral cats. They're not culling them or wiping them out. I mean, a lot of the feral cats have become quite established into the ecosystem. They might, I don't know if they're having a negative impact in general, but rather than just slaughtering cats, they are neutering them. And it's similar to, there's been programs, for example, where, for example, deer populations have got out of control because there aren't any wolves. Essentially, you provide deer contraception, and that's a way of monitoring and managing their population without just massive culls. It doesn't often work to the same degree as having wolves, because wolves are very good at managing deer populations. But it's a really good solution for the feral cat hybridization problem, especially when it's a problem so intimately linked with breeding. So it's an easy fix if you can do it.
Their aim is to do the same thing, is to neuter feral cats. As how they monitor that, how they capture every feral cat, I'm not entirely sure. They didn't say that, but obviously that's their mission. That's actually a really good website, as is the savingwildcats.org. That's an incredible website if you want more information. Yeah. And it's a really big European partnership as well. There's lots and lots of organisations involved in that, including generous support from the Scottish Government, the Garfield Western Foundation, National Trust for Scotland, People's Trust for Endangered Species, Players of the People's Postcode Lottery, European Nature Trust, European Wildlife Comeback Fund. So many organisations involved in that Saving Wildcats project.
Oh, actually, I thought before I should touch on that. Saving Wildcats obviously become the flagship, but an organisation called Scottish Wildcat Action, which ran from 2015 to 2020, and then essentially became integrated into what is now Saving Wildcats. And it was really the foundation of that now flagship project. They were the people that demonstrated that the hybridization was a lot more severe than we previously thought. They focused really heavily on monitoring the wildcat populations, controlling the feral cat, again, doing capture, neuter, and release, as well as genetic testing, camera trap surveys, to essentially just try and find the wildcats out there. They created 5 priority areas where habitat was protected, feral cats were managed, and community engagement was high. So they really kicked it all off before, and then have led into what has become saving wildcats. Yeah. So they provided the foundation and really deserve a bit of a shout out for the people who kicked that all off and realised just how severe the problem was.
It's actually turned into a really big project with lots of organisations involved, and that's so brilliant to see. So, you know, we're just going to have to keep an eye on that, aren't we? It's going to be an interesting one to keep an eye on, actually. In fact, I'm going to keep an eye on that website and those.
Yeah, and we can hopefully, however long down the line, provide a little update on those reintroduced wildcats that happened in 2023.
So maybe that'll be part of our good news story in January, and we can actually say, yeah, going back to that
population's
project,
doing really well.
They now think there's, you know, maybe 75 breeding pairs or whatever it may be. Hopefully we can be able to come back to you with stuff like that. So, but a fascinating animal.
Yeah.
I just love the look on its face. That cat is absolutely stunning animal.
I mean, actually, if you go to our Instagram, we used the picture of the Scottish wildcat for our positive news.
Yes,
so there's going to be two Scottish wildcats on our Instagram grid.
Nothing wrong with that.
But yeah, there we go. That's the history, the plight, and hopefully the resurgence of the Scottish wildcat. What a fantastic animal. I mean, we're big cat lovers, but what a fantastic animal.
And let's hope that all of that conservation work going ahead works, you know, so I'm sure it will, because I say there's so many organizations involved. I can't see why it won't.
Yeah, so thank you very much for listening.
Thanks very much for listening, as ever.
Influencer stuff, because we're obviously big time podcast influencers. Please go follow us over on Instagram at the Birdie Bug Pod. Obviously, wherever, I don't know if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, they all have slightly different things, but give a follow, give a review, give a like. If you want to say hi, ping us a message on Instagram, all that good stuff. And thank you very much.
Thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.